Charlie Haughey, first of all, you're very welcome to Radio Kerry, and thanks very much for talking to Liam Higgins and myself. And you have a great love for Kerry. You've been coming down here for years. What's the great love you have for it?
Well, I suppose it's become a habit by now. I came here, I don't know how many years ago, with Owen Cane. He was in the army. He's related to the Canes here. And we started coming to Dingle then, and we've been coming ever since. And, of course, the big thing is the regatta, which we had yesterday. That's always a fabulous occasion. There's something very special about it. And, of course, I suppose largely because it has to do with the sea, and I'm very, very much a seaman. Have been all my life, sailing and so on.
It was ironic, Mr. Haughey, that when you were starting the regatta here yesterday in Dingle, that out in Lucerne in Switzerland, we had three Irish crews winning world rowing gold medals, the first time it was ever done. Now, your love for the sea and the regatta, big thing for Ireland, wasn't it?
Oh, marvellous thing. And it's sort of becoming more and more widespread all the time. I mean, our athletes at all levels now are doing wonderfully well. At the international level, and there's a great upsurge in the performance. You know, the runners and as you say, the rowers, and then of course the show jumping team is doing very well. So all in all, things are on the up and up as far as sport in Ireland generally is concerned.
Now, of course, your family would be deeply embedded in Gaelic football and Gaelic sports. Your brother Jack, of course, which we'll come to later, won All Ireland medal with Dublin. What are your early memories of Gaelic football and sports in the Haughey family? And how many were in the family?
Well, there were seven of us, three girls and four boys. But my earliest memory was, of course, school. I went to Scunmuir Marino, and then afterwards to St. Joseph's Fairview, which we always call Joey's. And I started playing hurling and football, practically as soon as I went to school, because they were great sporting schools, the two of them, Scunmuir and Joyce. And, our sport, hurling and football particularly, were our lives at that time. And, I just kept on after that, started playing with Vincent's. And then I also played with Parnell. As a matter of fact, probably my only claim to fame on the football field was that I won a senior county medal with Parnell. Don't ask me when that was now, because it's so long ago.
Would you know some of your teammates?
I would indeed, yeah. They were the Parnell's people. They're very big club now, and those days it was quite a small local club really, but they've come on a great deal since then. And there was people like Johnny Gibbons and people like that, were the big names of the time, and they were great footballers. But of course, conditions in those days, facilities in those days were very, weren't great, let me just say that. And very often you had to strip off behind a hedge somewhere and go out and play, and we all did that. But thank God now there's great facilities now for all sports.
Now, you played minor football, and you won a county championship. Had you any chance of getting on, the Dublin Miners, going further, like your brother?
I played once for the Dublin Miners, yeah. But I wasn't of that, anything of that class, like Jock was. He went on, as you know, and won an All-Ireland medal. But I never broke through to the top, as it were. But I enjoyed it very much. I don't think you ever put as much into anything as you do when you're playing for your school as a schoolboy. But I was delighted to be, but I was not brilliant, let me say that. I was kind of middle of the road. So I would score the odd goal or point or over the bar.
Now, of course, the St. Vincent's team in Dublin were the big team around your time, weren't they?
Oh, they were, yeah. They dominated completely. I mean, that famous Dublin team that you used to have those great titanic struggles with Kerry, they were, I think at one stage, 13 or 40 of them were from Vincent's, yeah. And I remember all the great names at that time, Kevin Heffernan and Dan O'Mahony and Des Foley and Lar Foley I still keep in touch with Larfoy. Poor old Des is dead now, but they were heroic men, great footballers, you know, great hurlers, great everything, but they were really top class.
Now, I suppose, used your dad bring you to Croke Park, then what are your earliest memories of going to Croke Park and the games you saw?
No, my dad didn't bring me because my dad died fairly young, you know, so he was... But my earliest recollections was Hill 16. That's where we used to all go, troop down there every Sunday. And of course, when we were in Joey's in particular, we could get to play in Croke Park because it was sort of beside us. And we played a few of our school matches in Croke Park. But then I remember, and I think it was Kilkenny and Limerick were playing way back, and it was a terribly wet day. And I remember it particularly because it was a great match, and we stood in the pouring rain watching those great heroes of those times, and from Hill 16. So that's my earliest recollection of being in Croke Park.
And what about now turning to Kerry teams? What are your earliest memories of going to Croke Park and seeing the green and gold? And now that you're down in Kerry in your holidays, can you sense the tradition? Can you nearly reach out and touch what's in the air in relation to Kerry football?
Oh, of course you can feel it. You can feel it. You know, it's as you say, it's in the air. It's everywhere. It's a tradition. It's a faith. It's a religion. It's everything you like. But of course, I know Paddy Shea very well. He's one of my best friends. But I remember being at Croke Park, won All-Ireland, and Dublin were playing Kerry. And Dublin were the odds-on favourite. And Bridie Fitz here, at this house, was sitting beside me because Tom was the chairman of Kerry County Council. So they were in the box, the Deeney Moore box. And Bridie was sitting beside me, being very proper and sedate. You know, as befits the chairman of the wife of the chairman of Kerry County Council. And then it suddenly happened, the whole game took on a new turn. Kerry suddenly came top, dominant, scored a goal, and this very nice, polite woman, who up to then had been very well behaved, jumped out of her seat and roared. So that was a typical Kerry reaction. But they were great matches, those Dublin-Kerry matches.
Do you find, Charlie, when you come to Kerry on your holidays and you're coming regularly, that there's more talk about football than anything else down here?
There is, of course, yeah. And it's bread in the bone, I suppose, is the best way to put it. But particularly Dingle here is a great footballing town. Some mighty men came from here, and they still, they're under Paddy Shea now. They're doing very well. Unfortunately, they beat Dublin the last time out, but once Dublin are out of it, I would just be shouting for Kerry, of course.
What about Kerry footballers down through the years that come to your mind from we'd say this period back along as far as you can go, all the great names?
Yes, there would be. Paddy Bond now from here would be one of the great names.
Paddy Kennedy,
Tomás Ash. And then the famous seven in a row. I would have met nearly all of those lads. Yeah, they were a great bunch.
And then you had
a gentleman, every one of them, you know.
And of course, you had Mick O'Connell. We must talk about him.
Yes. I think Mick O'Connell's great gift, apart from his football capacity, was to be in the right place at the right time. Somehow or other, he always seemed to be where the ball was, where he could use the ball to advantage. He had a great sense of location, you know, great sense of, he was unique, and a lovely guy too.
Do you get the opportunity now to watch the games and the semi-finals and the finals on television? Did you see Kerry playing Dublin?
I did, yes.
What did you think of Maurice Fitzgerald?
Maurice Fitzgerald is another. He's in the Mick O'Connell mold, if you like. Very, very, very like Mick O'Connell in his style and his accuracy. Maurice Fitzgerald is a footballer of his own class. Like, he's just exceptional, you know.
Now, moving through your political life, you've come across, of course, loads of people in connection with the football. Politicians, now we're talking about. Did football play a big part in your political life in relation to meeting people through the football and the great people that were in the Dáil that were ex-footballers? I met, there's a lot of them there really, wasn't there?
Well, there were, yes. Particularly in a by-election situation, we were always keen to get a prominent footballer or to stand as a candidate in by-elections. But then, they made their own, they made their impact politically as well as on the hurling football field. I mean, they might have got elected because they were great hurlers or footballers, but after that, they were as good a politician as the next.
And we were talking about the great, one man that must come to mind is John Wilson, the great Cavan footballer, who could have been a great friend of yours and played against Kerry in that famous Polo Grounds in 1947, when my own clubman, Dinny Lyon, was captain and we were beaten. John Wilson was a great footballer.
He was indeed, yes, and a great all-round man, you know, and he was a very, very good, an excellent politician, very good minister. And as you say, he was at that famous match in Polo Grounds, New York, and he went on then, of course, to have a political career, which he was in politics from almost as long as I was. You know, we were in the same, we were contemporaries in politics, but yeah, there were others, you know, there were.
Of course, when you were Taoiseach, you never had any trouble getting tickets for the All-Irelands. You had a first-class seat for the hurling and the football. You'd march in and you were up to your seat and we'd be over the Hill 16. Fabio said, geez, isn't he a lucky man? He's two tickets every year for the All-Irelands. What did those days, Charlie, mean to you?
They were great days and it was a great perk, you know, and still the GAA still invite me to the both All-Irelands. They're very courteous in that regard. But there was one occasion when Paddy Shea, Kerry were playing and I was there as Taoiseach, and Paddy Shea and some of them hatched a plot, they were going to kidnap me. But I think either councils prevailed.
Would you find when Dublin would be playing Croke Park now, were you able to kind of keep a kind of composure about it, or would you let yourself go a little bit?
Well, a bit of both, I think, is the honest answer to that. Sometimes you couldn't but jump up and roar and shout on some particular brilliant piece of football or hurling happened. But by and large, as Taoiseach, or even as a minister, you'd be expected to, well, I would anyway expect to, would want to show a sort of decorum and even neutrality, perhaps, no matter how you felt inside. You'd have to be neutral outwardly anyway.
Turning to your own family then, how many were in the family?
There were seven of us. Four boys and three girls. Now, as you know, my brother Jock Corrick was very good. You know, he was one of that famous Dublin team with Heffo and all the boys, and he got an All Ireland medal. Well, there's a little thing now that comes to me. that particular year when Dublin beat Derry,
and 58.
Was it 58, yeah. Well, no matter what happened that day, the Sam Maguire was going to come to our house, because my mother was from Derry, and she had, you know, there's always Derry people coming down, and if Derry won, they were going to bring the Sam Maguire house, and if Dublin won, of course, they were going to bring the Sam Maguire house. So no matter what way the cat jumped, the Sam Maguire was coming to our house in Belton Park.
Jock, of course, played in that legendary 1955 All-Ireland final against Kerry, which we're still talking about down here, by the way, and will be forevermore. And, of course, in 58, then he won his All-Ireland medal. You were probably at those two finals. Was there a lot of excitement? And what did it mean to you to have your brother playing in an All-Ireland final?
Oh, it was something very special. a bit anxious, too, I suppose. You wanted him to play well and acquit himself well. But that was a particularly important thing from the family's point of view, to have him out there playing for Dublin. And then, of course, winning the All-Ireland was very special altogether. That was the top of the range.
Charlie, we're hearing an awful lot now about drug testing coming into the GA. Is it fair to bring it into amateur games, would you think? It's a topic of a conversation at the moment now. I find it hard to imagine a Kerry footballer being inside in the dressing room after an All Ireland final and some fellow right court coming in dragging him out. What would you think of that?
Well, I don't think I would venture any opinion on it. It's a kind of a controversial matter at the moment. There are strong arguments on both sides, and fortunately I don't have to take a decision about it. I leave that to others, so I wouldn't comment on that particular one.
Do you, in the relation to the games, since you started going to Croke Park, there's been a lot of changes. The games have extended now. They've gone to 35 minutes a side. You have red and yellow cards coming in, and you have a lot of soloing, and the whole game has changed in your lifetime. Do you think it's a better game now than it was in the 50s?
Infinitely better. The quality of the football, particular, and the hurling too, but football is the one that strikes me, is a way up the ladder now from what it used to be. More skill, you know, more stamina, better teams, really, you know. And I think perhaps there's a bit more emphasis now on team work, you know, and a team acting coherently as a team, as distinct from the great stars of the old days. Like when do you remember Mick Mackey? I remember seeing those, the two of them, Mick and what was the other brother's name?
John,
yeah. Now, they would dominate the game, you know. Now, I don't think that happens so much nowadays. The emphasis is much more on the team and working together as a team coherently, and I think much more planning goes into the games these days.
In your trips around the world, in your political life, how important is the GA, Charlie, around the world in all the places that you have visited? Have you come across a lot of GA people? You must have in your travels.
Yes, I would have. Of course, one thinks first of all of America, there, where there's a great GA tradition, and as you know, the All Ireland was played in New York once. And it's a very important link for our emigrants to, you know, to tune into the matches and, you know, keep in touch with the home situation. And then I was in Australia too, and they knew about the GA score because of their own particular type of football. But there would be a strong presence down there too among the Irish community.
Of course, turning to other sports for a minute, you had the great privilege, I suppose, really, of being in Paris when Sean Kelly and Stephen Roach finished the Tour de France. Stephen Roach finished as winner. I don't think we'll ever see anything like that from an Irishman again. What did that mean, and what's your views on that?
Well, I got a lot of slagging about that, as you know, afterwards, but it wasn't really my fault. I was being ribbed about that it was I who won the Tour de France, not Stephen Roach. But that was just the way the situation developed. Because I was over there, and Jacques Chirac was Prime Minister at the time, and he took me in his car around the place, and then we were on the platform. And actually, Stephen Roach was really thrilled, I think, to see me there, and told me since, because it meant an awful lot to him, for me to be there on behalf of the country, and claiming his achievement. But it was really a very special occasion, all right, because here was our Irish man, and I mean, the Tour de France is the tops. You can't go any higher than winning the Tour de France, and that was a really spectacular achievement by Stephen.
And of course, also,
isn't he got a son now riding? I think, yeah, he has. Yeah,
of course, Stephen and Sean Kelly, they did wonders for Ireland, didn't they? When they were in their prime. Stephen Roach and Sean Kelly, they did wonders for Ireland in the sporting sense around the world.
Oh, of course they did, because, I mean, I suppose there's no sporting event. Well, maybe Formula One racing is now, but in those days, the Tour de France was, I suppose, the most publicised sporting event of all, and the fact that these two great Irishmen were so prominent and so great was very good. It was a very good thing for Ireland. Apart from their own personal achievements.
We'll come back before we finish up and before Liam Higgins starts talking about horse racing. I know he's anxious to ask you a few words, but Charlie, coming back again to Kerry now and your love for Kerry and Kerry football, could you sum up for me? I've asked this to a lot of people. What's the secret of Kerry, in Charlie Haughey's opinion, in relation to football and tradition?
Well, I don't think you should isolate football as a Kerry achievement. I think Kerry people have that sort of spirit to achieve in everything they do. For instance, outside Dublin, I don't think there's any county better organised for the tourist industry than Kerry, and providing better quality services than Kerry. So it's a thing in the Kerry spirit, in the Kerry mind. I often think that the Kerry people succeed in doing things because they can't contemplate anything but succeeding, and that, of course, is very, very evident on the football field.
Liam Higgins, of course, my friend, my co-commentator on Radio Kerry, he's a great, of course, won two All-Ireland medals himself. You probably saw him winning him in 69 and 70.
Yes, I would have seen him, all right.
Indeed, yeah, a great man for the racing, Liam. You have a few questions here in relation to Charlie's horse racing career.
I have indeed. Before we go on to the horse racing, I think we'll talk about a mutual friend first. You mentioned Paddy Shea there a while ago. Great friend of mine, great friend of yours, and a great footballer, and now become a very successful manager as well. Also a great character and a bit of a rogue.
Paddy is a very exceptional. He's one off, you know. When they were up there in Pentry, when he came along, they broke the mould after that. but it's amazing that he could transfer from being such a great footballer to being an equally successful manager. I mean, it's not everybody can do that. But I'm very fond of Paddy. He is a great character. And of course, I suppose he's the essential Kerry man, really, Paddy.
No doubt about that. To turn to the horse racing for a moment, you have a great interest in it, and you've had some very good successes, especially in national hunt racing.
I had indeed, yes. The best horse we ever had was Flashing Steel, of course. He won the Grand National at Perry House, and that was probably the best, the greatest time in the racing situation to win the Grand National. He was a lovely horse. He had great spirit. He was a bit highly strong, but he had a great character, if I could use that expression. And he would never give up. Like, he'd run his heart out, and he was just a very exceptional horse.
Yeah, I remember his Irish Grand National victory. It was a special race indeed, and some great jockeymanship as well on that occasion. You, of course, have bred some successful horses as well.
Yes, we bred a few, yes. We didn't ever produce a world beat or anything like that, but we produced fair one. For instance, now, we had Aristocracy, and he won a race for us. He won a race at the Curra, but then he went to stud, and he's actually the sire of Limestone Lad. So it's a good old strain there.
Oh yeah, Limestone Lad, very successful at Cheltenham for the past 2 years.
That's right, yeah.
And national hunt racing in general, and flat racing, of course, the racing industry is very important to Ireland, Charlie.
Oh, it is, yes, and becoming more so now. Every day it's more important. We're world class, international class now for breeding, particularly for breeding and for racing. And it's a great advantage. I mean, it's a great benefit to the country because it's already a decentralized industry. Stud farms are all scattered throughout the country. And it's, apart from the publicity that, you know, we get from a great Irish horse winning a race somewhere, it's a very, very valuable income for the country. And now that Coolmore are doing so well, I think they're now top of the international class.
You could say they've actually taken on the Arabs and beaten them at their own game.
Well, I wouldn't like to be as contentious as that, but I wouldn't disagree with you either.
Some great jockeys, Michael Kinnane, Johnny Murton, recent times, have done Ireland proud in some huge races worldwide.
Yeah, I know Michael Kinnane very well. He's a great friend of Emer's and John Mulhern's, and he's a thorough gentleman, but and a great, skillful rider.
John Mulhern is quite successful as a trainer, has been over several years now. Not huge big victories, but regular, consistent.
That's it, yeah. He'd have his little quota of winners every season. He doesn't want to be a big enterprise, you know, to a large extent, but John, it's a hobby more than anything else. So he wouldn't be interested in building up a huge stable or, you know, anything like that. But he certainly does his own. Nobody knows much about horses as John does. Perhaps Emer does too, but between them, they know it all, I think. But John, he does have his quota of winners.
Well, Emer himself gave Siobhan O'Connor and myself a great ship in three races 5 or 6 years ago there, Milton Field, one of his horses. I celebrated for a month afterwards, so we thank John Mulhern very much for that.
Charlie, as we're coming to the end of our interview, first of all, again, as I said at the start, I want to thank you most sincerely. It was lovely talking to you. It was lovely. And how are you keeping?
Oh, I'm keeping grand, keeping okay.
Enjoying the sunshine of Dingle.
Well, isn't this a lovely day to be in Dingle?
Could you describe that view to us? No, you'd know the view. I'm from Killarney myself, so you'll have to describe.
What's wrong with that?
Would you describe that view for us?
Well, we're sitting here in Bradley Fitzgerald's house, looking out across the bay. And there's the marina down there, and then over here is the Burnham Tower over there, and then there's Ventry House over there. But it's a beautiful seascape. It's just almost impossible to describe how wonderfully beautiful it is. Then we're looking across there over to Valencia, and that's going over in your own direction over there towards Killarney. But just here now is, and of course we're seeing it in ideal conditions today. It's a pleasure. It's a positive physical pleasure to be here on this day like this and looking out at that scenery.
We are a bit of a hot ball. How is it you chose Dingle instead of Killarney now? Because I reckon myself that Killarney is far nicer than Dingle. How did you choose this place?
Well, I'm not going to enter into that. I'm too good a politician to go down that road. But no, I told you, I came to Dingle with Owen Kane. He was a friend of mine. He was in the army, and he was from here. At least his people were from here, the Canes. You know the Canes here in Dingle. And he brought me here to start with. And two of us used to come regularly. And then that grew and grew from there.
Well, Charlie Haughey, former Taoiseach, great lover of Kerry, lover of all sports, many thanks for talking to Terrace Talk and Radio Kerry, and long life to you, and I hope everything goes well for you.
Thank you very much. And I have always had a very special regard for Radio Kerry. I think they're a great station. And when we were out on Inishfickillon, that's all we ever listened to is Radio Kerry. And I actually had the privilege of opening Radio Kerry a long time ago. And I'm delighted every year they go from success to success. And they're a great old station. And I'm delighted to have an opportunity of talking to you.
Thank you again.